Good morning, everyone. Fears of atomic energy are really something that stems from the Cold War, the aftermath of the atomic bombing of Japan and the beginning of the nuclear confrontation with the Soviet Union. But 30 years ago on Sunday, the Three Mile Island nuclear power plant turned those fears into a civilian fear, not just of atoms and bombs, but of power plants themselves. Here's Bruce Smith, the commissioner of Newberry Township, Pennsylvania, at a demonstration just a few days after the Three Mile Island shutdown of a nuclear power plant that is still called the worst nuclear disaster in American history.
Sure, a few protesters warned us, but we didn't heed their warnings. Instead, we believe the experts who said nuclear power was the safest energy man could produce.
A lie!
We believe the scientists who said the possibility of nuclear accident was...
The belief in nuclear power was rattled by the Three Mile Island accident, but much has changed in 30 years. And in June of 2005, President Bush, speaking to nuclear workers, says that the legacy of Three Mile Island is over and it's time to think anew about nuclear power.
That frightened a lot of folks. Yet people have got to understand that advances in science and engineering and plant design have made nuclear plants far safer than ever before.
So in the aftermath of oil price spikes that were historic last summer, and looking forward in the stimulus package and a vision for an energy future that is projected by Barack Obama, we thought this anniversary was pretty significant in the news, far more than just historical. And joining us to talk about it is Jonathan McClellan, who's president of the New York City chapter of the United States Association for Energy Economics. He's here in the studio. Jonathan, good morning.
Good morning.
And Christian Parenti, a contributing editor at The Nation, also here with us. So, Christian, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
So let's talk. It seems to me that, the China syndrome kind of Hollywood evocation of nuclear fears is at both relevant and cliche, thinking 30 years after Three Mile Island. How are we to put the fears that were talked about in the aftermath of Three Mile Island into context for a 21st century world that's more concerned, it seems to me, more frightened of high oil prices and diminished fossil fuel and even climate change than they are nuclear energy? Christian?
Well, I think actually that the threats are very much the same, because what we're dealing with is very much the same fleet of reactors. There are 103 reactors around the country in 64 places, and they're all now about 40 years old. And there's this discussion about this new type of nuclear power and new fleet of reactors, but the economics for that don't work out. The Bush administration put $18 billion worth of government subsidies on the table several years ago, and no one has bitten at it. And meanwhile, what's going on, because the economics of new power plants don't work, what's happening is a new set of firms like Entergy, which own these old plants, have been applying for and receiving relicensing. So plants that were designed to last 40 years are now getting licenses to operate for 60 years, and in many cases at 120% of their designed and intended capacity.
All right,
and
so
that,
Christian,
I think, is
very
risky.
Christian says old plants are scary, but is there a business model for new technology, new nuclear power plants, Jonathan McClellan?
I think certainly there are now incentives in place that weren't there a number of years ago. Certainly the Energy Policy Act of 2005 put in loan guarantees, as Christian mentioned. Whether these plants get built or not is still a challenge. There is a long regulatory review process. And the fact is that no plants have been built for a couple of decades.
And the waste problem has not been solved, not really even been addressed, even though there's this theoretical idea that it's going to all be put in Yucca Mountain. What's the status of that at this point?
Well, I think Yucca Mountain is looking less and less likely at this stage. The alternative at the moment is to store the waste on site. So the problem of nuclear waste has not yet been solved.
It seems to me that one of the real legacies, and for both of you, I suspect you may have something to say on this, the real legacies of Three Mile Island, aside from our fears of a nuclear meltdown or the China syndrome or anything like that, the real legacy is that with nuclear power and with the Three Mile Island accident, suddenly consumers began to look at the real cost of their energy, and it had almost nothing to do with the utility bill that they received. And that is something that has had implications for fossil fuels, hydroelectric power. The real cost of energy was something that began with nukes, and we're still dealing with it now, even with coal and other fossil fuels. Jonathan, and then Christian.
Certainly, there's I think there's an awareness that came out of Three Mile Island of the safety issues and waste issues. But this is not simply confined to the nuclear industry. If you look at the coal ash spill in Tennessee in December of 2008, is a massive environmental disaster. And I think people are certainly aware of these issues, and especially global warming impacts pretty much everything that we do in the energy industry.
Energy use has costs. Do you think the Obama administration has the political courage to remove the kind of blinders that conceal the real cost of energy, whether we're talking about nukes or coal, Christian?
I would hope so. But, I mean, Obama has a sort of spotty record on atomic power. You know, one of his main advisors, David Axelrod, has worked very closely with the atomic energy industry and received a lot of money consulting for them. And Obama has promised huge amounts of subsidies for new atomic plants. But during his campaign, he at least did not support relicensing. And that's really the whole issue. In this conversation, we're always talking about what I really think is totally irrelevant and not going to happen, which is building new power plants.
It never happen?
It's not going to happen because the economics of it simply
don't
work.
But how did they do it in France and not do it here in the United States?
They did it, one, a long time ago when safety regulations weren't as strict. In France, they have a single model and a single company that receives massive government support. The French atomic power industry, like the Japanese, does not run on a profit and loss basis. It's very much about the strategic nature of nuclear power in France is subsidized by the rest of the economy so that France has a physically independent source of power, which we now see is totally filthy because the Rhone or one of the major river systems there has become badly contaminated by that. So,
but even in the United States, with wider geographic, greater dispersion of the plants, they're of necessity concentrated in France, and there are environmental consequences to that. Could we adopt that French model of a massive subsidy? The Department of Energy basically becomes the Department of Nuclear Energy.
We actually have that, and you know, the largest bankruptcy, government bankruptcy, municipal bankruptcy in U.S. history is for nuclear bonds. The power crisis,
the Washington
in
public power
exactly.
supply system,
the California power crisis. A lot of that was about the debt accrued by old nuke plants. So there already is a program of public subsidy for mopping up the old costs. I do not think that it's realistic to think that the system we have here of many competitive private firms, all with different models for how they're going to build power plants, could be turned into something like the French version of the industry.
Jonathan McClellan, is nuclear power of necessity or ultimately impeded by a group of zealots who will accept no argument in favor of this non-carbon producing energy source?
Well, I'm not necessarily pro or against nuclear, but I think the discussion of the topic is nuanced, and meeting the energy needs of America and indeed the world is a complex issue. Nuclear certainly has its benefits in terms of zero emissions, but there are other challenges. And I think to say Obama is pro-nuclear or anti-nuclear and have that very simple discussion needs to move on and get a bit more sophisticated.
Will a plant be built, a new nuclear plant be built in the United States in the next 10, 15 years?
If you look at the timeline, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission is set to make decisions on currently 17 companies have made applications to build plants. That decision will come out in 2011, 2012.
At the fastest track, what could actually be built?
Well, after that, it's going to take at least 4 to 5 years to actually build a plant. And this is assuming that you have financing lined up, you don't run into construction issues, all of these things that are going to come into play. That simply haven't been tested in the last 20 or so years.
The key fact is, the atomic power industry has been waiting for 100% subsidy and guarantee. They have about 80% guaranteed, and they will not commit to providing the other 20%, or they can't get banks to commit to providing the other 20% of funding. And so, I mean, that says something about the dangers of this technology and the problems in financing it. Until they have the government backing 100% of their potential losses, they're really not going to build.
Well, it seems at this this point that with the delays that you're talking about, Jonathan, and the difficulties that you're talking about, Christian, at the very least, nuclear capacity lies somewhere in the conservation margin. We could conserve energy more easily than we could produce new nuclear power. Perhaps that's the legacy of Three Mile Island at this point, unless there is new capacity built. Jonathan McClellan, president of the New York City chapter of the United States Association for Energy Economics, and Christian Parenti, contributing editor at The Nation. Thanks to both of you for thinking about 30 years after Three Mile Island.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.